Hello, welcome to Beautiful Lunchtime. This is all copywritten. This is only the opinion of the U.S. Peace Corps. No, wait, this is not the opinion of the U.S. Peace Corps. And, so, earlier I said that I wanted to write about the beach. I wanted to go out. And I wanted to sit at the beach and just write whatever I was experiencing. So I sort of got the chance to do that. And that's the following episode. All right, let's go. Sitting in a chair facing the table at the beach house, my back is turned to Tita Millie, the house helper. But I see her in peripheral, the suggestion of her pink shirt. At the sink, she runs water to clean a pot. Splashing, wiping, scraping, she clanks the pot round and round, then fills it with clean water and puts it on the stove. The stove is in front of me, so she comes out of peripheral, arms straining with the heavy pot, places it down. Turning on the gas. Click goes the stove lighter. Click, click, phoom. The flames are hidden beneath the indentation of the stove, but the heat makes a steady distortion of the air, encasing the pot in a wavy, transparent outline that blurs the background, the green bamboo picket fence, the orange flags, the low tree with spiny leaves. All blurred. While waiting for the pot to boil, Tita Millie fills two little pitchers with water and walks the perimeter of the fence, pouring that water into each of nearly 100 decorative plants. The water pitchers can only hold enough water to cover 5 plants at a time, so she must go back and forth and back and forth and back to get them all. I remain seated. I could help her, but I'm writing instead. Watching the page, I see her short, deliberate steps crossing this corner of my eye, then behind, each short journey to and fro. If she steps too far from view, I simply look into the shiny metal pot where I find her reflection. I can also see myself in the pot, sitting slouched at the table. But the water is ready now. Tita Millie takes it off the stove and brings it directly behind me, where I can definitely not see. I hear her making sounds with a paper bag. She sings out one crisp, tall note. Da! It's a regular day for the weather of early summer, hot, but with a slight breeze over the sand. That same breeze seems to be blowing a couple hundred feet overhead, parallel to the shore. Big clouds, dense and as a pillared cake, float gently. As they float, they spread. First formed atop the perspiring mountaintop, the vapors test their boundaries. The cake remains intact, perpetually forming from the tips of the highest trees, but the outer layer, the frosting, as it were, peels away with the breeze. Separate from the greater mass, I see particular fluffy forms. I see a cowboy rearing horse, chasing an errant cow and calf. But as soon as each particularity appears, it vanishes, spread far by the wind and unprotected from the central mass. The cowboy, horse, and cows melt through the noon sun into blue. I've been observing just one cloud cake, but there are many. Throughout the wide sky, above each distant island, great clouds stand in lines. Some have become quite broad, reaching over the sea. But none have done this without losing their density, becoming limp and fluffy fingers dangling untouchably in the highest altitudes. I imagine these clouds wanting more from the sky, wanting to reach out, to claim and fill the hole with their best substance, those cake-like vapors. Are they frustrated as each billows above each island and watches the others like a family trapped in several separate trains but unable to cross the tracks? When I stand outside the beach house and look left down the beach, I see a simple scene. The sand goes around a curve in the island, dirty blonde sand with darkened lines where the water has recently washed over. From the edge of the waves, there's about 20 feet of this sand until the start of the green. About 10 feet between both water and green, there is a high tide line of debris, a contour of brown crud, organic and inorganic. Coconuts, the skeletons of palm leaves, plastic wrappers, old shoes. It's hard to see these details when just looking from the beach house, but I've walked down and examined closely, so I know. Above the high tide line, there are boats, all small bunkas, which are canoes with bamboo outriggers, all painted green and blue, or blue and white, although there's one with a square patch of naked wood on its side. And that's it, the whole beach, when I look to the left side of the beach house. There are only a few extra features which I will add to complete the picture. First, the hunk of tangled driftwood, evidently tree roots, that sits, bleached bone white, some distance off and close to the water. Also, not far away, a fallen tree with the round trunk like of an elephant leg lies buried in the sand, narrow roots sticking out like little snakes. Last, there is a young man wearing a flat-rimmed swag baseball cap standing behind the fallen tree working in the heat. With a wooden oar, he scoops sand into red and white canvas sacks, filling each sack with 10 to 20 oarfuls. When all the sacks are full, he takes one and lifts it onto his shoulders, resting it into the crook of his neck. Then he walks into the green. I've not ventured a description of that green because I'm here for the beach, but I can permit enough to show the vegetation the young man disappears behind. A roundish bush with spiky leaves, and the bush he reappears behind, several minutes later, a branchy tree bush with oval leaves. Trunks of the coconut trees stand behind him, as well as numerous paths that lead to homes and the road. Looking directly from the beach house, I see two small islands, one in front of the other. The one in back is visible because it has a tall mountain. On display in a Manila museum, there's a 10,000-year-old burial shroud that came from that island in the back, the one with the mountain. There are other islands, two to the left of the two just mentioned, but I don't often think of these. They're there, but distant and shrouded by the glares and steams and vapors of the far horizon. When I do see them, it's by accident. They appear in the clearing of the blue, when a stray thought happens to drag my gaze across the shoreline, and I think, oh yes, those islands. As I write, the weather is cool now. Clouds hang low. Even the obvious islands, with towns and barangays and ancient history, are invisible. I wonder if the clouds might hide this shore from across the way, but I doubt it. The bigger the island, the harder it is to shroud. A description of the other side of the beach, when I sit outside the beach house and look right, is far less simple than the left side and the center, because the right side not only encompasses more land, but also includes many important visions. The dragon, the towers, the town, the fishport, the river. In addition to these landmarks, there are plenty of details. Houses, little bonkas, even a few big bonkas, even boats. Driftwood, tiny crabs if you look close enough. Kids swimming, fishermen. At low tide, there's even more. The little scrabbly rocks where edible shells have become exposed and are collected by squatting family groups who peer in and snatch up, sharing slowly filling pails. But now, as I make the first attempt at description, it is night. These visions and details are almost entirely obscured by darkness. It is a world of sound now, constant licking of waves upon the shore, children laughing somewhere, and a karaoke machine that just turned on plays a triumphant MIDI song with a melody quite similar to the one from 2001 Space Odyssey. Only the bold lights of man and nature break through to my sight. The towers string vertical lights upon from the mountaintop, lightning bolts through a cloud long across the sky. Fishermen far out on the water tease the fish with flickering flashlights. And there is me, bathed in a bubble of yellow glow and sitting heavy while digesting rice and veggies, leaning my head on my right hand, while with my left hand I count these details. In the day again, I sit beside the beach house, watching the right side view. Now the sun is high, everything. Now the sun is high, it is time to begin the description proper. This is my strategy. I will tackle each major landmark of the right side view one at a time, in order to give a full rendering of the whole. I will begin with the most mundane landmarks, meaning the most easiest to imagine, and then work up in descriptive difficulty until we reach the most extraordinary factors of the shore. This method will graduate us through levels of suspense, holding the tension on your question, what is the dragon, until the last possible moment. So to start, observe the river. A slow channel of water empties from the mountains and into the sea. Watch how the beach accommodates its flow. The sand swoops out along a parabola, and the parabola is cut by the water in the highest two standard deviations. That water isn't always a river. It isn't always even water. During high tide, the ocean pushes against the incoming flow and goes upstream, swirling a vortex against downstream. During low tide, both water bodies recede, and a sandy bridge stands between them. There are two ways to walk from the beach house to the main town, by the road or by the beach. The beach is faster, but it risks high tide, which isn't a problem unless I have short shoes and pants on, or if I'm walking with Nicole's dog Oso. Oso is hilariously terrified of the water. She backs away and tries to escape her leash, whimpers, yelps, and writhes. "It's just water," I shout, "chill." But there's no reasoning with her. I must carry her, which is adorably awkward. She's getting too old for that pampering, and heavier too. But what can I do? In the time that it's taken me to describe this beach so far, the weather has begun to change from hot to rainy. The clouds can now more easily merge, and they gather late afternoon forces. Right now, the entire sky is gray as a mild patter falls upon the beach house roof. I watched this one come in. I'd been backstroking along the glassy water, watching as the sun nodded off beneath a front of clouds that, stretched from horizon to horizon, approached like a cavalry line, dropping a gray banner of rain, flashing silver streaks, beating drums.